Use my body to keep you alive.
Hi, this is Davy Crockett. I'd rather kill a bear than be part of Ultra Runner Podcast.
Welcome to UltraRunnerPodcast.com. I'm your co-host, Scotty Sando, joined in studio with Eric Schranz. Welcome to a new Dirty Muddy episode. This week on my trail run, I learned that a night run is a perfect thing for a date night.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's how my wife and I roll. Date nights, go for a night run. Done.
Well, I can't wait to hear more. Our next guest is none other than Davy Crockett. And when we're talking to people in our little subculture of ultra running, this Davy Crockett is the Davy Crockett. Davy doesn't have any huge sponsors, and he started running at the age of 46. But he's got some great stories to tell, and we are anxious to hear them. By his own admission, he was a 230-pound couch potato 10 years ago, and now he's run more ultras than I knew existed. First race he ran since junior high was a 50K. He followed it up a few months later with a 100-miler and then found himself on the DL. Probably no big surprise. Time to reevaluate this ultra thing. Now, Davy's resume includes Hurt, Bear, Leadville, TRT, Rocky Raccoon, Wasatch, Javelina, name it, he's done it. And list even includes quite a few wins in there. He most recently competed in Across the Years in Arizona just about 2 weeks ago, where he ran for 2 days around a track, and he finished his last few miles wearing jeans. But I'm sure we'll get to that in a sec. Davy doesn't get injured. He keeps getting faster, and he's got a certain penchant for timed events, which I'm anxious to hear about. Lives in Colorado with his 6 kids, where he also participates in climbing, fastpacking, adventure running, and anything really else to keep him busy. This is his first time on UltraRunnerPodcast.com. We are excited to hear about the Tales from the Wild Frontier. You knew I'd get that in there somewhere.
I knew. I was hoping you would.
Yep. Davy, thanks for joining us. How you
great
doing?
Great to be here.
So you generally take about 2 weeks off, it seems, before ultras, in between ultras, rather, and it's been 11 days. So you getting ready to race this weekend?
Well, it's kind of cold. I tell you, this cold weather has got me taking a little break here. But I am probably going to Saturday run across the frozen Utah lake here in Utah.
Ah,
no, cross the frozen Utah lake.
Just explain.
Well, it's the largest natural freshwater lake in Utah. In fact, all last month I ran all the way around it, 82 miles. nobody had ever tried doing that before. And what it does is, on very cold winters, it will freeze all the way over, and the ice is about 4 to 6 inches thick now. And so it's just a real crazy experience running across about 11 miles across and 11 miles back. And sometimes it fogs over, so you just have to use a GPS to guide you along the way because you can't see the shore in any direction. So it's kind of just a fun, crazy adventure run with obvious risks. But
you don't get a running start and just try to slide all the way?
Well, I tested it out last Saturday, and there were some slick spots, I tell you. Yeah, a lot of people will ski skate. I've heard people even ice skate good portions of it.
Is there? I hope you don't mind me asking. Is there a Mrs. Crockett in your life?
There is. I said in the intro, we have 6 kids.
Okay. I imagine I know I have a lot of cops in my life, and I know their wives. And when their husband leaves that door, there's a little thing in the back of mine says, I may never see them again. I have to imagine the same kind of goes for you.
Oh, it does. In fact, on one of my runs across the Utah lake, there was a guy who noticed me taking off, and he lost sight of me. He actually called the authorities, and they sent up a helicopter searching for me. But by the time the helicopter was up and I heard it way in the distance, I was a good 7-8 miles away, so they had no idea where I was.
When you say cold, I need to everybody's got their own version of cold. What are we talking cold?
Oh, it's been below zero.
Goodness.
Right now it's, you know, it's down in the 20s. It'll be probably in the morning down in the single digits.
A logistical question. What do you wear on your feet to run across an iced lake?
Oh, just running shoes, just trail shoes. Works fine. Usually there's about an inch of snow or crystals.
Okay, so you're not running on an ice rink.
No,
okay.
Not usually.
How long, I'm curious about this run you did around the lake. You said 82 miles, is that right?
Yeah.
How long
did
that take you to do?
Oh, I can't remember. I took my time, so started really, how many hours was it? 18 hours or something like that. It took my time. It was, as I was getting ready for across the years, I did a series of 400K training runs in 3 weeks to try to get my mileage base up and getting used to running on a flat surface. So I just started 2:00 in the morning and headed south and just kept running.
Is this alone?
Yeah. I almost always run alone in most of my training activities. Yeah.
And what are you doing for, you know, nutrition?
So what's interesting about these long flat adventure runs, what I try to do is time it so I can come into some little town and go to some gas station and use them as my aid stations along the way.
Nice. Fill up on some gas station jerky. Nice.
Yeah.
we have some friends that run for our podcast, Jesse Berrigan, Ken McKee, and we're going to interview them next to talk about their circumnavigation around Folsom Lake, which is close to 70 miles. So just shy of you.
But it's not iced over.
But it's not iced over.
Well, it wasn't when I did it last month.
Okay.
Davey, I'm real interested to rewind about 10 years ago.
All right.
When you're 230-something pound, as you described, couch potato, sitting around.
I was.
Can you just kind of start from there, and what got you off the couch? I mean, I know you got hiking, but kind of tell that story again, if you would.
Well, each year I would go on a backpacking trip with some buddies. We'd choose different places, everything from Yellowstone to Sawtooth, all sorts of mountain ranges around here. So every year I'd spend like 2-3 weeks before the backpacking trip to try to get into shape. not with very good results. And back in 2002, we had one of these come up, and so I said, okay, I'm going to go hike this high mountain Utah called Timpanogos. Goes up about 12,000 feet, and I'd never done it before. And it took me 10 grueling hours to go up and down that mountain, and college kids do it every weekend, and they were going past me, and one young couple even called me a tortoise, and I'm so slow. And so after that backpacking trip, the very next weekend, I just went right back up that mountain, determined, and I did it in much, much quicker time. And in my mind, I just made it a decision that I would really get into shape. And I kept going up that mountain over and over again. I've been up it, I think about 80 times now to the very top. And little by little, I started getting in shape, losing pounds, and being able to go to longer distances.
Did you know other runners? Were people helping you? Were you reading?
No, I didn't. I was just doing kind of just long distance hiking. I'd never heard of ultras before. I had heard of something called the Wasatch 100, and I thought it was a bunch of crazies running up on roads somewhere in the mountains.
It is a bunch of crazy running.
Yeah, I've run it about 5 or 6 times.
Please keep going.
So after a while, as I did get in shape and went further and further, yes, my wife started getting worried about me going off in the wilderness off by myself. She says, well, can't you find a friend? And so I started searching the internet for perhaps clubs or something, and ran across a guy. He says, why don't you try the races? I said, what races? And he says, ultras. I said, what's that? And I found one, and I think a month later, I entered my first 50K and gave it a try.
Is Davey, you're in your 40s at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the quintessential, your wife's going, this is a midlife crisis.
Definitely. We call it my midlife crisis. It really is.
Yeah, and then so you went your first 50K and then 100-miler.
Yeah, I did 50K, and then I went and did White River 50 up in Washington.
That's beautiful.
How are those two first experiences for you?
Oh, horrible. In fact, I love going and look at the results of that White River 50, I think back in 2004, because I'm listed dead last, absolutely dead last. In fact, 2 seconds over the cutoff of 14 hours.
There's a certain pride in that, isn't there?
No, there is. And I think it was a month and a half later, I entered the Bear 100 and tried my first 100, and I got to 87 miles and bonked for the first time in my life. I didn't know what it was. Thought I was dying and had to quit at that point. And so I concluded I was totally over my head, that ultra runners were just a beast that I could not understand.
And then what clicked in your head that made you bounce back?
Well, I had to overcome all my injuries. Took a couple months, and then I started, I subscribed to the Ultra List and started listening and learning, and I decided I needed to start learning how to run. And lost more weight by swimming a whole bunch. And eventually, in the next, I guess it was February, I entered Rocky Raccoon 100 and finished my first 100.
And what did you learn there? What did you do differently at Rocky than you'd done before?
Well, I learned that I could run, and I learned a lot more about nutrition, what electrolytes were, and the balance, and how to keep going and keep the determination going, and I was just actually thrilled. I think I finished in 26:53 that time, and I got hooked after that.
What did you learn about nutrition? What do you have any special requirements, or what works for you?
Oh, I usually, you know, now that I take hundreds more seriously and try to compete. During at least the first 50, I do mostly liquids with gels and diluted Ensure, and I love, I actually keep bacon with me all the time because that helps my stomach. And
come again?
Bacon.
As in fried pig fat.
That's right. That's right. I've just had periods where my stomach has just turned upside down for hours and hours and hours, and I've learned that bacon gets me out of it.
No kidding. Is there anything scientifically that you can explain that?
All I can think of is it's probably a loss of electrolytes, and probably the salt and the grease and fat.
Where do you help. You don't run with? Where do you keep it?
Oh, in my pocket.
Mixed with sweat, you must smell awesome.
Hey, bacon's great.
You know what? I honestly think that senses do so much for you, and that the smell of bacon can resurrect a dead body.
Well, where I discovered it is that Bighorn. I think it's Bear Cow Camp. It's an aid station about 40 and 80 miles or so. They put on such a big feast of bacon, and each time I run that, when I hit that, boy, that just kind of brings me to life. So I kind of learned.
Now, okay, I'm gonna. How did you discover it was bacon? Because you had to experiment on the trail, I'm guessing, during a training run. or how did you decide on bacon?
Well, like I say, it's during these 100-milers when I get to an aid station.
Okay.
That has it, you know. When you're ready to quit the whole race because your stomach just won't let you keep going, and you sit there, and then you say, "Well, let me try eating this." All of a sudden, 10 minutes later, you jump up and say, "Wow, I'm ready to run."
I think we all have that one food item where we thought there's no freaking way that's going to work for me, and it does.
Yeah.
It sounds like the worst thing possible on paper, but once you're there and in the moment, it's the best thing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about, because your 2004, that's your foray into running. And then 2 years later, you find yourself at what might be arguably one of the toughest hundreds that we know of, Hurt 100, and you killed it, 22 hours.
Oh, and I actually did not finish that.
Oh, okay.
I was still in over my head at that point. I took my wife there as a vacation and had some knee problems probably about two-thirds of the way through. So that ups and downs. I tell you, I want to get back there. I got to get even. That's one of the very few DNFs that I haven't gotten even with. So I hope to get there 1 year.
That's... You know, looking at your that Hurt kind of stands out as it's not like Wasatch or Tahoe or Bear, which are all, you know, at least somewhat similar terrains. I mean, Hurt is such a freakishly different event.
Totally different. It just seems like an obstacle course the whole way through.
It just sounds yeah. Horrible.
Hey, you tough mudder fanatics, you want a challenge?
Yeah, yeah. But looking at your list, there's quite a few events that you keep going back to over and over again. You know, Pony Express stands out. You've done Tahoe a number of times. You've done a lot of these events a few times, and there's some events you've only done one time.
Mm-hmm.
What are your favorite events to go to, and which events are not built for first time 100 milers?
Well, that's a good question. Well, my favorites, here in Utah, I love the Bear 100. It's in the autumn time. The weather's cooler. I don't like the hot weather races. Like Vermont, I've always struggled there, just the heat and humidity. And so the Bear 100, it's more of a down home laid back race, sometimes not marked quite as well as other races, so it's kind of an adventure run in a way too. And I like that challenge. I do like that challenge. And then I'm the race director for the Pony Express 100 here.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah, and it's out in the West Desert on the historic Pony Express trail, the actual route. It's very, very flat, and the unique thing about the race is you require a crew to go along with you. So you have family and friends that actually drive around and stop every 4 miles to give you support. And the crews and family and friends just get a kick out of being able to be with their runner the entire time and watch them kill themselves over 100 miles.
Have you always been the RD? Did you start the race?
I did. I started it as an adventure run, I think, way back even before I started running ultras. I knew I lived within 2 miles of the historic trail. So one Friday, I think it was, I told my wife, I'm just going to start running. I'll tell you when to come and pick me up. And I ran on the historic trail west, and I think it was about 35 miles later, called her up, says, okay, come get me.
Your wife needs to write a book. How to live and survive with an ultra runner.
Yeah, because forgive me, I'm going to talk about your wife for just a second. What sounds great is that when you were, I'm going to assume, together at the beginning, you weren't a crazy, big, huge quotes, or ultra runner, and you turned into one.
Well, I'm always obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, we all
nature,
are. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
After... You know, when I finished my first 100, when I told her I will never do that again, and I packed up all my running stuff, she actually had hope and believed me. But after I had said that 3 times after finishing 100, she just quit believing that.
I'll see your Davy Crockett and raise you. One of my relatives, he rode shotgun on the Pony Express Trail.
All right.
And this coming spring, I mean, it's not the same thing by any means, but I'm running 100K that goes from Sutter's Mill along the American River all the way to Sutter's Fort, which is in downtown Sacramento.
Yeah.
And that's what the miners, they would travel to and fro. So a little bit of a connection there.
And that's what I like about some of these runs. I like to combine history with it. And part of this Pony Express run, I publish a history of all the different stations that we go through and try to make it kind of a historical connection, thus, you know, running in the footsteps or the hoofprints, in this case, of history.
I'll tell you what, my daughter starts learning about American West history Daddy's going to run an ultra, and you're going to study. All right, I'll pull you out of school.
Right. Education expense. No, Davey, what interests me is that you've got all these adventure runs like you're talking about with all this historical, these great, I'm going to run for 35 miles, come out and get me. And then you run around a stupid park for 2 days.
That's right.
Total dichotomy or total opposite. What draws you to that?
Well, what I really like about timed runs, and I've done a number of them I love across the years, is just, I don't know, the ability to set goals and the instant feedback of where you are based on, you know, they have big screen TVs that show you your pace for the past lap. So your mind is just constantly churning about your pace and where you're at. You can see your competitors so closely, and you can and monitor where they are. So it just feeds my competitive nature. I discovered that I could actually do pretty well in them. Across the years, well, three years ago, I entered the 48-hour the first time and came out the winner, did 187 miles. But I had quit around 160 miles and went to bed and said, I'm done. And 4 hours later, I got up and looked at the board, and I was four miles behind the leading lady, and I said, I'm going to catch her, and took off and went crazy, and indeed do. So to me, it's just kind of a, you know, great controlled environment where you can really push the speed. All my personal records in distances have been on in a run like that.
I got two questions. One statement, one question. First statement is, I didn't know that about these sorts of races, that you could leave the course and then come back and pick up where you left off.
That's correct. Yeah.
Why is that? Do you know?
Well, it's just about distance, and you know, you have your chip on it, and so as long as you're coming in the same place. So everybody, you know, the ones who stay out 2-3 days usually have tents set up and go in, and it's kind of funny during the late night hours, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, the track kind of disappears. You know, people disappear from the track and are off getting some rest. But the, you know, the real serious runners that really want to pile up the miles are still out there trudging along.
I read this article about Scott Jurek a couple years ago, and it was when he was going to do the 24-hour event in Cleveland. And the writer spoke about how these sorts of races draw unique individuals you may not find at an ultra. Is that true?
It is true. I think mountain ultra runners can do very good at it, but I've seen so many of them come to these and kind of have to quit. Across the years, this year we had some pretty good ones there, Dave James and Ian Sharman and some others, but they're so used to doing ups and downs in the mountains that they start having some difficulties and decide to save it, pack it in for another day.
Okay, and so can you how do you prepare yourself, or what kind of mindset do you need to have for this event as opposed to an ultra event?
Well, I think it does require a lot of training on flats, which can be somewhat tedious for people. I prepare for them. I also, you know, I do a lot of treadmill just to mentally punish myself, maybe to get ready for the grueling nature of just going around in circles. So it really is both physical and mental.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have as much eye candy along the way of nature to, you know, keep you interested, but so it's really you against the clock and your competitors.
Davey, the farthest you've gone at ATY is 48 hours, right?
Yes.
Are any plans to go 72 or to go and do Sri Chimnoy in New York?
Not really. You know, it's the longer it gets, it starts turning into, you know, I look at those 72-hour runners out there, and they start doing just a ton of walking.
Yeah.
And I do better running, and it's better on my feet, and I enjoy it a lot better. 48 hours is tough, though, because sleep deprivation just is a killer. That second night, it just, you kind of lose all your motivation as you get so tired. So that's probably my limit is 48.
And getting back and staying on across the years, you took first 2 years ago at the event. Last year, you came in second. Last year at mile 120, you sustained a stress fracture, but you didn't stop until mile 174.
That's right. I had bad pain around 120. I didn't know what it was. In fact, I didn't know what it was for weeks later. In fact, I went ahead and ran Rocky Raccoon. five weeks later, I wanted to get my 500-mile jacket there. And, boy, what happened was I think the fracture all through Rocky Raccoons kept cracking further and further and further.
The things we'll do for silly garments.
Yeah. And so I think it ended up breaking almost completely through my tibia, about 3 inches below my knee. I did finish.
Wow.
I did get the jacket, but then I couldn't run for about 6 months. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Geez,
yeah,
geez.
So it was a rough, it's been a rough year last year.
Now, that's flat. You know, you do a lot of this flat stuff. I want to jump back to mountain running as well. One of your, what you say apparently is your favorite types of running is technical downhill.
Yeah.
Can you give me some tips? That is without a doubt my worst type of running. Technical uphill I don't like, but technical downhill I just feel like I'm going to wipe out. And you don't get injured. So what's the secret?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's from my snow skiing background as a kid and through the adult years. Just love skiing, and then once you get cruising down, running some technical trail. To me, it's very much very similar, like taking the moguls and. And so I love running across the Grand Canyon. I've run across and back, I think, 13 times now, and it's great fun.
That's talk to us more about the Grand Canyon. Everybody I know has got rim to rim to rim on their bucket list if they haven't done it already. When is the best time to do it? Where's the best start point, and what should you expect?
Well, the best times, of course, you don't want to do it during the heat. Just don't do it in June, July, August, and probably September. You'll regret it. I've tried it in May a couple times and usually had it wasn't enjoyable. So April's great, and October and November are the times that I usually go. And, you know, you can pick the South Rim or from the North Rim since I live in Utah. Starting from the North Rim is more convenient for me, but I've started at the South Rim at times too.
And what are some newbie mistakes that people make?
Mostly it's the heat.
Okay.
They'll go during the heat time, but I mean, and probably underestimating how difficult it, the difference of what it is. Yes, you're going down first and. But it's just the constant either downhill or constant uphill. You just don't have, like when you run in mountain trails, you usually have rolling trails, ups and downs. Well, this is constant one way or another. So you can cramp up, and it usually takes longer than you're used to. And you do a little research where you can obtain the water, and usually can't get lost. The trails are pretty easy to follow.
Staying on the thread of mountain running, TRT, Tahoe Rim Trail, just had their registration, and there's a wait list. It filled up fast.
Within
a couple hours, it was full.
And you've
done that a couple times.
I have five times. I got my 500-mile belt they give out for that.
So can you give some advice to the first-timer to TRT, even if they have, hundo experience? TRTs, they've changed the course over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
It's an animal.
Yeah, I like TRT. It's to me an easier mountain course. I think what's kind of difficult, at least for the 100, is because you have to do the 50 twice. So mentally, when you come into that after the first loop, I just see so many people drop out at that point. They just the mental exercise of thinking about going that loop another time is really tough.
Davey, you're complaining about running two loops of something, and you just ran 128 loops.
That's right. And they added this ski slope climb to the course a few years ago, and that thing is pretty brutal, I tell you.
Yeah, I've heard that every name in the book has been yelled at the top of that thing.
Well, when I do it, you know, when I do it, I just don't look up to the top.
Yeah.
I just look about 10 feet ahead of me and just keep plodding or pushing as hard as I can up there, and before you know it, you're kind of up at the top.
How many hundreds have you run to this day, Davey?
Let's see, 51. I do keep track.
It sounds like you are a numbers guy. Do you, what has changed since then? Are you still, do you have a crew with you? Does your wife help you out? Do you have a pacer ever? How does a normal 100 look for you?
My normal 100 is I go myself, use a few drop bags, and it's really myself. At times I'll use a crew here for the local, when I run Wasatch or the Bear, just to get my friends involved. But I've learned about pacers, at least for me, they kind of distract me a little bit, and I'd start worrying more about them than I do about me. So when I do use them, it's just usually for fun, and I'm probably less serious about the race that I'm in.
Mm. Staying on that topic of how you approach a race, you're a numbers guy, and you do a spreadsheet of these are my splits, this is my mileage, this is my pace, and compare that to elevation. Can you talk about the benefits of that and what one should do if they want to start doing that when they're preparing for their next 100?
Yeah, what I do is I create a spreadsheet that probably lists out all the aid stations and the miles to that aid station, and then I try to predict what my pace will be. And kind of set some goals to that. So instead of trying to get the whole 100-mile race, my mind wrapped around that, I try to wrap my mind around the different segments and try to keep some goals and come in with those. And it's kind of funny. My predictions sometimes are just bizarre. when I run the Bear, I had a friend, an aid station around mile 30 or so, and I told him, hey, my pace chart, I'm going to come in at this particular time. And he was astounded when I came in within the minute of when I had said it. And then the next year, did the same thing. I came even closer. And so it's, you know, after a while, you can really predict things pretty good once you get to know the course and what your abilities are.
And how do you keep this? Do you keep that chart on your person?
I do.
When you're running?
At times I'll maybe tape it to my water bottle or put it in a pocket or a lot of times I just lose it. But yeah, keeping it around kind of keeps me going.
What would happen if you got to your next 100 and that had been left at home?
That bothers me. And I've done that.
I hear you getting a bit agitated.
I have. I remember across the years, I think the first time I lost it, and my dear wife, I had her go get my computer and use a pen and pencil or a pencil and paper and write down my pace chart again for me.
Huh. So you depend on that.
Yeah, I did. Huh. It's something that helps. Now when I have a really poor race and get behind all those goals, it goes out the window. I just don't pay attention to it at all. But if I'm truly racing and on pace, it's a great benefit to keep me focused.
You just mentioned across the years again, and I read your race report, which is great. Scott will link to the report on the website. It sounds like you went to sleep, you went to the hotel, you went to sleep, you got up, and then what?
Well, this year was kind of different. I brought my brother and my son also ran, and neither of them had finished hundreds before. So perhaps I was a little less serious, and I was also pretty worried about my healing from my leg. It's still not quite 100% healed, so I didn't take it terribly serious. So, but the second day, I was focused on helping my son finish his first 100. So,
how old is he?
He is 29.
Okay,
and he's finished some 50s, but never 100. So he entered the 48 hour to give him time to actually finish 100 mile all the way. So, when he did finish, it took him about 37 hours. We just packed it in and went to a at the hotel, and I was very happy to sleep. But when I got up in the morning, boy, I felt great, and that always happens. and so I was just in my jeans, and I told my son, I'm going to go get some more miles. It was like an hour and a half. I was running, you know, 9, 10 minute paces around that track, probably the fastest one out there.
In
point.
Jeans.
Yeah, in jeans.
Jeans, you said your wallet and your cell phone in your pocket.
Yeah, I forgot. I had a wallet. Yeah, I think... So I climbed two or three places in the standings, and I was pretty happy about that.
That's fantastic. And that's the first trio that we know of in across the year's history to finish a hundo.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Same last name? Or very cool.
Yeah. Bob Crockett, Kevin Crockett, and Davy Crockett.
Yeah, the same event. That's awesome.
Yeah. Huh.
That's great.
Huh. What's coming up on your, what's coming up this year for you?
Well, going to try to, you know, last year was a little slow for me recovering, but plan to do some, you know, local hundreds here, the Antelope Island Buffalo Run 100, Salt Flats 100, which is a fairly new 100 out here where they actually run on the speedway, the Bonneville Salt Flats Speedway.
Huh, ooh, that's cool.
About 14 miles across the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Oh, neat.
It's pretty cool. And there's a new Bryce 100 down by Bryce National Park that I'm going to run in for the first time.
I'll be there. I'm doing that one, too.
Yeah.
I'll see you there.
That looks really good. I'm always a little nervous about first-year 100.
Inaugurals? Yeah.
But I go into them with an attitude that, hey, it could turn into an adventure run, and that's okay.
I love your attitude. I think it's great. Davey, we've come into this part of the interview where we do a fartlek round, which is 10 question answers that's done relatively fast. So I want to hit you with the first question. Please tell me one fact about Davy Crockett, the folk hero.
One fact about Davy Crockett, the folk hero?
Yes.
Oh, he killed a bear when he's only 3.
Ever heard that before?
I've heard them all.
So what is on your bucket list for the guy who's virtually done everything?
Bucket list. Well, you know what I really want to do, and I want to run the Tonto Trail in the Grand Canyon end to end. Scott Jurek did most of it, although he didn't start from the furthest down river. So it's the trail in the inner canyon, and it runs for about 100 miles inside the canyon.
Huh.
I'm looking perhaps to do that in April.
Cool. Nice.
Jeez.
Do you have a nickname?
I use Davey.
Davey?
Yeah.
Okay. Where would you like to run next with your son?
Well, I thought about calling him up to run across the frozen Utah lake this week. So,
and he said, Dad.
Now, hopefully, maybe I could get him to bring a rope in case one of us fall in.
Oh, man.
What shoes are you currently running in?
I run most of my races in Hokas.
Nice. Which ones?
Probably Bondi B's fit me the best.
Yeah, I'm running in Stinson's. I love them.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend at an aid station on average?
It depends on if I'm doing it good or not. You know, in early points of the race, probably 1 to 2 minutes is really what I try to do. And but, you know, there's some races that I look at all my times and I end up, you know, spending an hour or so total in all of them. But
he
I really try to do 2 or 3 minutes at most.
You are king of the world. If you could put an ultra anywhere, where would it be?
Oh, where would it be? Grand Canyon. I'd love it, but I know we can't.
Yeah, that's okay.
Permitting? Yep.
Who inspires you?
Who inspired me to run?
Well, that or just in general, who inspires you?
Oh, inspires me. My father inspires me. My wife, my kids.
Great. I want to follow this up with, do you have a memorable hallucination?
Yeah, I think it was, where was it? Was it Rocky Raccoon? I don't know. I remember I I saw something in the trail that looked like a toy submarine. I swear it was.
And our last question, and it always is our last question, what is your favorite beer?
I don't drink. I'm a good Mormon boy here in Utah, so
right.
I don't drink at all.
Fair enough, fair enough. But there is a good, there's something out of Utah that is available here in the States or here in California.
Dale's is Colorado. Yeah, Utah makes beer, just not a lot of beer.
Yeah.
We've had it. Yeah, we had it because we're holding it and saying, wait a minute, brewed in Utah.
Oh, yeah. Lots of drink.
Yeah,
shit.
Utah,
no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, Davy Crockett, damn it, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I hope we can talk to you again. I know you'll be seeing Eric at Bryce, but I hope you and I can cross paths one day. I think it'll be great.
Great. I look forward to it.
It's great. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Wow. There he goes.
Yeah, he's, you know, I think we could have talked to him for probably twice as much. I mean, getting into the details of, and this guy knows details of events. I mean, I'm guessing you could say, what's the distance between the third and fourth aid station at X race? And he's going to know.
He tell you the elevation and
he's going to know analysis. Interesting way of approaching an ultra is just going pure analysis. And that's
tell you what, it can't hurt you at all to know everything you can about a race.
I know. My brain just freaks out. That's all I think about. My brain just cranks numbers instead of relaxing. And it obviously works for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very well.
Wow. And just the consistency of his running.
He
and
hasn't
like,
been injured in 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like Mike Wording before Mike Wording was Mike Wording, and just always competing.
How many hundreds last year?
He ran 10 hundreds last year.
That's
10
nuts.
Hundreds.
And injured.
I didn't do 10 of anything last year, Eric.
And he was severely injured. I mean, he really knows his stuff. And this isn't somebody who started running 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he started running in his 40s 9 years ago or something.
Yep.
But has really racked up quite a resume. And again, a bunch of wins. I mean, you look at his ultra ultra sign up, and he's got a bunch of ones on there and twos and threes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fast dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to get beat by a late 50s good Mormon boy.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Handily. But I think if I get lost, he's a guy I'd like to be lost with, because I have a feeling that he knows how to get out of situations.
I have a feeling.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I would like to find if he does shorter. Does he jump into halves? And does he do funny stuff like that? Or does he just stick to this long and grueling? Man, 48 hours around a stupid park. Woo!
Mm-hmm. So what's going on at the website right now?
Don't know. It's doing fine. I mean, we've obviously talked about it last week. We redesigned it, and it's looking good, and It's looking good. I will be posting a new beer review soon, and I'm going to unleash the bottle and show you, and you're going to go, oh my God, you actually got that.
Oh my God, you actually got that.
Yeah. If you've been to a specialty beer purveyor, you have seen this bright pink bottle of Rogue Voodoo Donut. It is bright. I mean, bright pink Pepto-Bismol electric pink.
That's no lie.
And it's, it's brewed out of Rogue, which makes great beer, and that's the only reason I got it. I said, Rogue makes great beer, but I'm going to try this. It's chocolate, peanut butter, and banana ale. It's about an $11 bottle of beer.
I just had a mini throw up.
Yeah, it's not an $11 I will be giving the good people to Rogue again. My sister loved it. My sister loved it. But it tastes like you have some kind of beer banana cola mixed with a pretty decent dark amber with some really, really roasted malts thrown in there. It's a weird. And buying it, I felt like I was buying a box of tampons or something. I'm like,
it is pink.
It's bright pink. I mean, it just screams feminine.
it does. It really does.
And I had to tell the guy, I buy beer from a lot. I said, this isn't for me. No, I'm not buying this for me. This
whatever
is,
you say.
It is quite a beer. Again, chocolate, peanut butter, and banana ale. It's called Voodoo Donut. yeah, I'm going to say amiss from the good people at
Rogue. Voodoo don't. That's what
yeah,
I say.
Yeah, but we also do, we have a contest going that's ending today we're giving away some entries to Luis Escobar's Penny Lane trail race down in the San Luis Obispo area that looks awesome. I'm not going to be able to make it, but it looks awesome. So we'll pick those winners and get those free entries off to them.
Sweet. All right, we'll keep a look on for that. Look at our Facebook page, and please give us a nice review on iTunes. If you wouldn't mind, we would really appreciate that. And our donation station is there if you want to get a bumper sticker. It's there. All the details are online. So please take a look and have a look at our new fancy site. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Davey Crockett. He's Eric Schranz. I'm Scotty Sando. You've been listening to UltraRunnerPodcast.com. Now go out and run. For a bite.